This is a special Occupation Nation edition of the Mike Malloy Show.
In the air, from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day. The fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Really? Could this be it? Could this be the democracy we've all been waiting for? Occupying your public airwaves right here on The Mike Malloy Show, Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, democracy lover, and all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com, once again drafted into duty right here to be the media with you, broadcasting live from the left coast from the beautiful studios of K-Talk AM 1150 in lovely downtown Burbank, coast to coast and around the globe with you tonight as the uprising continues. Delighted you could be with us here tonight. Hope you'll stay with us for three big hours ahead. Mike is, of course, in Washington, D.C. tonight. Occupy Washington, D.C.org or October 2011.org is now underway. Mike was emceeing the kickoff event this afternoon in Washington, D.C. We're going to hear from him in the next hour. We're going to get an update from Mike Malloy right here on The Mike Malloy Show as to how things went and how the protests are starting out and how long it looks like they may be around out there in Washington, D.C. It looks like they're going to be around the rest of the nation for quite a while, and so we're going to be covering a lot of it here tonight, of course, with Mike Malloy. We're also going to be talking with Joshua Holland of Alternate in the next hour. He was late night after we went off the air last night, and we have a great affiliate up in San Francisco, Green 960. We were hearing from occupiers around the country. We were hearing from folks in San Francisco who were occupying up there outside the Federal Reserve Building, I believe it is. And, I had asked one of the callers, I said, how's it going with the police there? How are you guys getting along? Are the police being supportive? He said, oh, yes, very. They're being great. Well, must have been an hour after we got off the air last night. The cops showed up, started putting on their helmets, their riot gear, their batons, started moving in to occupy San Francisco, which caused a bit of a stir on the Twitters last night. And I was actually following Joshua Holland, who was on the scene reporting what was going on. You can follow him yourself, by the way, on the Twitters at Joshua Hall, H-O-L. And they had brought a notice that the occupiers needed to take down their tents. This was, they had given them a deadline of midnight, and it was a cold night last night, rainy night certainly down here in L.A. I suspect the same was true up in San Francisco. And in the middle of the night, the police told them they needed to take down their tents. We will find out why. We will find out what happened from Joshua Holland in a little bit here. You can also join the conversation yourself at the bradblog.com chat room, which is up and open and being hosted by the lovely Dez for Earth. I think, is Jeannie Dean there yet? Jeannie Dean? Jeannie Dean will probably be there. She's been down at the Occupy LA encampment for the last few days. So hopefully she'll be joining us, as will Dale. And hopefully you. Come on by and occupy the Brad blog. We would love to see you there. You can also Twitter us throughout the night or whenever you'd like to Twitter me. My address there is the Brad blog. Would love to see from you there. And we will be, as we did last night, as we will again tomorrow night, keeping the entire third hour open for calls from the occupation. occupiers around the country, occupiers around the world. We would love to hear from you. Write down this phone number. This will be our number tonight and tomorrow, 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Write it down, because in the third hour, these are your public airwaves. They've been taken over by corporations. We, the people, have very little access to them left. You need to use them before you lose them more than you already have. That's 877-520-1150 in hour number three. We may get to some calls before that, but definitely in that third hour. Also, we're going to be joined by Nancy Toby from New Hampshire, the author. You know, we folks who know me, who know the work that I do at bradblog.com, know I cover a lot of election integrity issues, a lot of issues about democracy, the war on voting, the Republican war on voting, I'm sorry to say, and, of course, the problems with electronic voting. The insanity of electronic voting. Last night we had on the show Dr. Roger Johnston from Argonne National Labs, who recently, with his vulnerability assessment team there at that lab, and that's a U.S. lab, by the way, it's the Department of Energy runs that thing, found that they were able to hack a touchscreen voting machine with $10 in parts, or $26 if they wanted to add a remote control that would allow them to take over any touchscreen voting system from up to half a mile away. He also said he could do the same thing with a paper ballot optical scan computer. And while about 30% of the country use touchscreens, pretty much the rest of America uses paper ballots that are counted by computer, not by human beings. Well, since those systems are also easily manipulated and often fail, what the hell are we going to do about it? Tonight, we're going to start talking about solutions with Nancy Toby from New Hampshire, where they 40% of the towns count their ballots by hand in front of We the People, all parties looking, video cameras rolling right there at the precinct on election night, with results posted at the precinct before ballots move anywhere. A very, very difficult system to game, a terrific system to be able to oversee by the citizenry, at least those of us who care about self-governance. She's the author, Nancy Toby's the author of Hands-On Elections, an informational handbook for running real, get this, running real elections using real paper ballots counted by real people. Oh, imagine that. So we're going to talk about that and how you might be able to bring hand-counted paper ballots to your town. Occupy your polling place. Occupy your elections. Seems only right. So she's going to be joining us as well. So as you can tell, it's a big, big... Oh, and Desi Doyen, our producer, my lovely co-host of the Green News Report. If we can find the time, she may be joining us. Perhaps we'll play today's Green News Report. Okay, what other... That's a lot of business, but I think I got it all covered. Okay, a couple of things here. this is amazing. These occupations continue to grow, and they continue to grow even as we've got the folks on the right. Frankly, they are scared to death. They are scared to, you know, they might as well be bringing out guillotines at this point, because that's the way these plutocrats and these folks on the right who have been conned by the plutocrats, these folks, many of them in the Tea Party, who have been played for stooges, who have been conned, who have been tricked, who have been hoaxed into believing that sticking up for corporations and the top 1% of Americans is somehow good for America, is somehow good for the middle class. When the top 400 people in this nation have more wealth than the bottom 140 million Americans, you think we got a problem? And that's not always the way it's been. That is what it has become steadily over the last 30 years. Going to be talking with Josh Holland about that as well, because he's a big economist guy. And he's a book with a great name, too, but I can't find it. Where is it? Oh, yeah, here we go. Josh, his book is The 15 Biggest Lies About the Economy and Everything Else the Right Doesn't Want You to Know About Taxes, Jobs, and Corporate America. Listen, these guys are scared to death. Just look at Mitt Romney. What did Mitt Romney say? I got to get organized before I start. I can't even find the quote from Mitt. He's calling it un-American, I think is what he was calling these uprisings around the country. The same people who had been applauding the Tea Party for being great Americans, for standing up for their democracy, for standing up to big government. Those same idiots are now out there like Ann Coulter comparing these uprisings to Nazis. I'm not kidding. She said before the French Revolution, this reminds her of before the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution, and with only slight modification when the Nazis came to power. This is always the beginning of totalitarianism, she said. These people are scared to death. Herman Cain, God love him. Nice guy, dumb as dirt. Dumb as dirt. I'll try to play some of his clips when we come back, and some of what Sean Hannity had to say. Again, Sean Hannity, the biggest supporter of the Tea Party, couldn't be more proud of these Americans showing up to protest, to make noise. Of course, the Tea Party, they weren't the Tea Party. They were the sore loser party. That was it. That was all it ever was. And again, I wanted to make a distinction, not the Ron Paul Tea Party, not the real one, not the one that started back in 2007, but the fake Tea Party, the corporate Tea Party. You notice one thing about these occupations? They got no great big painted bus. No huge bus working across the country. Why? Because they ain't got money. Because this is a real grassroots movement. This is really we the people. And folks, it is happening. We'll see what happens. We'll see how far it goes. But it's happening in every corner of this nation, and it's about damn time. We're going to be covering it all night long. Glad you could join us here. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Much, much more. Stay with us. I will continue my rant momentarily. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy here on the Mike Malloy Show. Occupation Nation continues tonight. I will continue my rant in a moment. But as our local Los Angeles affiliate does not play the third hour of the program, I wanted to make sure to get an update from Occupy LA from our friend Sanchez. A very quick update because I'm running out of time already at the bottom of the hour. Hey, Sanchez.
Well, Sanchez, Senator Friedman, we had 500 to 800 in a lunchtime rally energized. It was a non-violent march, but we were more cohesive and more unified. There was an occupation of the Bank of America lobby where they brilliantly unfurled a giant check with the amount of the belly, the $608 billion. We are over 100 tents north of the city hall this evening. Everyone is energized. The General Assembly is getting ready to begin. We are 99. That's why they're afraid of us.
Yeah, they are afraid of you, and the crowds are building now that the rain has passed, Sanchez?
Yes, with peaceful, vocal, passive. We've got the unions behind us. IWW, we have the nurses, we have the teachers. We have all these other people. It came together today. It was a good old-fashioned lunchtime rally, Brad.
Thank you, brother. Thanks for checking in. And if you're in Los Angeles, get out there to City Hall. And by the way, you can stop by Brad Blog and see this remarkable resolution that the L.A. City Council is passing in support of Occupy L.A. Some really extraordinary language in there. So, hey, thanks, Sanchez. Stay in touch. All right. I wanted to get to what Romney had said here, to be specific, since I had referred to it. Romney said, I think it's dangerous, Mitt Romney said about the protests. This is class warfare. He thinks it's dangerous. He thinks it's class warfare. Well, if I was in his class, I'd be worried about that, too. But it's your class, Mitt, who started this war. It was your class, Mitt, who fired the first shot and who fired millions of Americans. That's how you made your bones, baby. What are you complaining about? You've been sending people to the unemployment line for years, and now you're complaining about class warfare? Maybe you should have thought of that in advance. Maybe all the plutocrats should have thought of that in advance. Because every time, and this is amazing to me, you know, I'm in favor of capitalism. Don't get me wrong. I'll say this over and over again. Capitalism is great. Competition is great. But you need to have rules. There needs to be referees. You can't let one guy like Mitt Romney control everybody else. When you take away the power of the people, when you take away the power of the unions themselves to compete, then you don't have capitalism anymore. You have authoritarianism. You have plutocracy. You have monopolies. That's what we have in this country. That's why the people are pissed off. This is not a class warfare. This isn't people who, you know, there's Marxism, social. They're scared to death. They are scared to death. No, the people want a fair shot. Nobody wants to put Apple out of business. But they do want health care. They do want fair wages. They do want all the things that Mitt Romney gave himself and robbed from everybody else. I don't think I have time for that. I keep promising as Herman Cain. One of these days I'm going to play. Because unbelievable how stupid this guy is. Again, nice guy, but stupid, dumb as dirt. I'll just, one part of what he said. He says, I don't have the facts to back this up, but I happen to believe that these demonstrations are planned and orchestrated to distract from the failed policies of the Obama administration. If you don't have a job and you're not rich, blame yourself, this jackass says. Blame yourself. It's all your fault. It's all your fault that these corporations moved all of their jobs to China, to Mexico, and told American workers to go to hell, because that would be better for America. Are you kidding, Herman Cain? Jesus. Brad, in for Mike.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, you look at what's going down? From L.A. to Chicago to Louisville to Wichita to Hartford, Anchorage, Charlotte, Lexington, Boston, Seattle, Philadelphia, Denver, Iowa City, Miami, Portland, and many, many more cities around this country. People are saying enough. They're standing up. It's a real grassroots movement. It's so real that there's some confusion about what the hell they actually want. Of course, when the people have been ignored for so long and the corporations are the only ones who are getting any attention, when the people have been ignored for so long, there's a lot of stuff that piles up. So it's going to take a while to figure this thing out, and I'm just fine with it. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, back here in for Mike Malloy on the Mike Malloy program while he's out in D.C., and he will, by the way, be joining us in the next hour. He was emceeing the Occupy Washington, D.C. rallies today. So we're going to hear from him. Last night, as I mentioned in the last hour, last night we were taking calls. We heard from folks out in San Francisco. I had asked one of them how things were going as far as the occupiers out there, how they were getting along with the police in comparison to what we saw in New York City with the pepper spray and the luring them onto the Brooklyn Bridge only to arrest, 700 or 800 of them. And he said it was great. The relationship with the police was great. Well, we've got a great affiliate up there in San Francisco, the great Green 960, who plays the Malloy Show. And, you know, so I was delighted to hear from folks in San Francisco. But when we went off the air, within about an hour, all of a sudden we start hearing reports that the police are putting on their riot gear and they're giving notice to folks, to the occupiers out there, that they needed to take down their tents by midnight on a cold and rainy night, or it would be taken down for them, or they would be arrested. Well, I was following Joshua Holland of Alternet. He's a editor and senior writer out there. He's also the author of The 15 Biggest Lies About the Economy and Everything Else the Right Doesn't Want You to Know About Taxes, Jobs, and Corporate America. I was following his coverage on the Twitters, where you can find him at Joshua Hall. That's H-O-L, Joshua Hall. He was covering what was going on there with the police as they were talking about moving in to the occupation. It was quite riveting in the middle of the night. I think it was somewhat remarkable to do at that time of night, and I'd like to find out why. Well, maybe Joshua can give us some answers. He joins us now here on the Mike Malloy Show. Hey, Joshua, welcome, sir, to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, Brad. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for being had. Now, so you were covering this. You were out there, what, until I think you signed off about midnight or 1 o'clock?
And you said maybe until about 1:45. You know, there was a call that went out on Twitter, and they said, look, the police are getting ready to move in, and they're going to, you know, smash, occupy San Francisco and arrest everybody. I got down there, and I saw, you know, quite a bit of agitation among the protesters. The police were around the corner. There was perhaps 70 of them. Most of them were kind of milling about, enjoying their overtime.
They are
public employees, the right's number one boogeyman right now.
Right.
And what I found was that they had decided that this is a rather large occupation on a city street, on Market Street, which is a touristy area in front of the Federal Reserve. And there had been quite a bit of infrastructure built, which I've written about this week. So mm-hmm. The protesters had not only tents for sleeping in, but they had a kitchen set up and an aid station and a library. It was quite the little community that they've built. And mm-hmm. I think this is a fascinating aspect of this whole story, is this genuine democratic kind of communities popping up in the streets of America. And when I got there was quite a bit of agitation. They were having a discussion about how to respond to an order that they'd received from the police to, as you mentioned in the introduction, take those tents down and clear out this stuff that they had built, this infrastructure, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And they had given it a midnight deadline, which came and went, and you know, the anxiety kind of mounted among the protesters, but, expecting the police to come in with all guns blazing.
Well, and before we get to whether they blazed or not, when was this notice actually issued? Because I didn't hear about it until about 11 o'clock at night. It says this is a notice from the police. This encampment is a violation of the law. For those involved in the encampment at the Federal Reserve Bank, you are in violation of one or more of the following local ordinances. And they talk about open flames, public nuisance, preparing or serving food without a permit.
When
was that issued, and when did they suddenly notice, Josh, that all of this was going on? 11 o'clock at night on a cold and rainy night?
Well, so I got there at about 11, and I guess they had been served those notices about an hour previously. So sometime at about 10 o'clock, the police handed out these notices that you mentioned. Look, let's not pretend that there wasn't an element of harassment involved in this. They were certainly asserting their power and influence over this, you know, very genuinely grassroots movement that had popped up on the city streets in front of the Federal Reserve Bank. They're legally, I think that they had good standing, at least as far as the San Francisco code goes. There are laws on the books about cooking and all of that stuff. So when they got there, I saw...
But Josh, when did they start doing this? Did they start cooking last night at 11?
They've been there for... I think 2.5 weeks now.
Okay, so 2.5 weeks, and suddenly last night, on a rainy, cold night, they suddenly noticed they were cooking?
I mean, no. Look, this thing has been growing. I've been visiting it every day, and every day it's larger. Brad, every day I go there, it's larger.
Good.
So last night when I got there, it was about threefold. It had grown in size by about threefold since Sunday. And, you know, when you challenge centers of power, they push back on you. I mean, this is nothing new in this country. We are aware of this dynamic, or we should be. And, you know, again, as I say, there's no doubt in my mind that part of it was the authorities, you know, asserting their authority. So they came in with that express idea. And one thing that I should really make clear is that this is not New York, and the SFPD is, and the city of San Francisco does not respond to protests the same way that the NYPD does. And soon after I arrived, we got news that one of the city supervisors was going to come down to the scene to lend support to the protesters and to negotiate with the cops. So that happened. John Avalos came down. He's a city supervisor.
Right.
And I went and followed him when he went and spoke with the senior policeman on the scene. I don't know if he's a commander or supervisor or whatnot. And he said, look, I'm really worried about this operation because, you know, there's tensions are high. And what's going to happen, I fear, is that your cops are going to go in there and people are going to react. And then you're going to have to use force and things are going to escalate.
And what happened? What happened after midnight as the deadline to remove this? I mean, this was the order. Accordingly, you are being ordered to take down this structure. Refusal
right.
to comply and or obstruction of our efforts to remove the structure may result in your arrest
That's
at 11
right.
o'clock.
So, you know, the first thing is that the police responded to the supervisor that they were going to give them some time to let them try to cart away as much stuff as they could before swooping in and doing that. And the protesters did do that. They organized, you know, it's fascinating to see this kind of democratic process at work. They organized a bunch of people with cars to come by and pick up as much stuff as possible and take it off site. And then sometime, and this occurred after I had my cell phone had run out, and I have a dog that needs to be walked, so I was back at home. It was about 2:15, 2:20 when it actually happened, and I watched the whole thing on live stream, and what happened was the police came in riot gear, and they formed a line, and, you know, I should step back one second because I forgot a key piece of this. When I first arrived, there was a meeting going on about how to respond to this. And there was a contingent who said, look, we are not going to acquiesce to the police's demands. This is outrageous. We're exercising our rights and we're not going to acquiesce at all. Another larger contingent, they were in the minority and they were willing to be arrested. They were willing to be arrested as a classic act of civil disobedience.
Right.
There was a larger group that said, look, the most important thing here is not getting arrested, but to maintain the occupation. So if we have to do it without a medical station for a day or two until we rebuild, that's fine.
They took the medical station?
Well, they took everything. The medical station is a tent with, you know, with a first aid kit.
Right.
So they took everything, yes. So the consensus was, because they couldn't reach consensus on how to respond to this, that those who are willing to confront the police and be arrested could do so, and the larger group, the majority who did not want to, would support them in such a way that they would not be subject to arrest as
well. Right.
So the police came in with riot gear. They made a line, and their goal, their mission, if you will, was to escort the Department of Public Works as they cleaned up the sidewalk. And they were, you know, intimidating, and they stood in a line with stone face. They refused to answer protesters' questions about what was going on. And a few protesters decided that they were, who had previously decided this, confronted police. There was some force used. One person was arrested and reportedly charged with assaulting an officer.
Let me, and Josh, I got to get to a break here, but let me just say, you know what? I think that the police, and you're right, you know, these are union members. They ought to be supporting. They ought to be like in Tahrir Square in Egypt. They ought to be standing with these protesters, not moving in at midnight. I was watching that live stream as well around 3 a.m. or something last night, Pacific time. And, you know, it's not like they moved in and were violent or swinging their batons or anything. But the notion that they would throw people out, that they would take their tents, their sleeping tents, their medical tents in the middle of the night, you know, I find that extraordinary. Contrast that, Josh, with what happened down here at Occupy LA, where we had torrential rain yesterday, and Mayor Villagrosa sent out 100 ponchos to the protesters, where the city council passed a resolution, an extraordinary resolution, where they talk about, you know, corporations holding undue influence and power in our country, and the key to this power is the corporate claim to personhood, and so forth, and they decry all of that in support of the protesters. I was just amazed to hear what happened there. To be frank, I'm glad that everybody is okay. Did they lose numbers in the bargain, Josh?
The thing is that when they do this, when the police overreact, I think that it only helps the protesters. So I have not been down there today because I had to work on a piece for tomorrow. But the reports that I'm getting, and I know several of the people down there, is that it's a larger crowd in very good spirits. They're rebuilding.
Good.
They're calling for more things. So, I mean, getting to your point, I think it's important to understand that there's a continuum here. I mean, in New York, you're seeing some real excessive force, brutality, indiscriminate. It certainly seems from where I'm sitting, indiscriminate use of mace, of batons. Mm-hmm. In Seattle, they arrested 24 people. I saw those on YouTube. There was quite a bit of violence with that. You know, as far as the continuum, I guess L.A. is showing the most progressive response to this broad movement. But I wouldn't put San Francisco with New York.
But no, I wouldn't either. All right, we got to take a quick break. Speaking with Joshua Holland of Alternet.org. Want to talk about his article, too. If top 1% hadn't ripped off trillions, you'd likely be making thousands of dollars more right now. Going to talk about that after the break with Joshua Holland. You're listening to Brad Friedman right here on The Mike Malloy Show. Stay with us.
One, two, three, four. One, two.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man.
All right, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Yeah, one for you, 19 for me, indeed. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, your friendly blogger, in tonight for Mike Malloy, speaking with Joshua Holland of Alternet on not just Occupy San Francisco, as he has been reporting and covering via the Twitters and via Alternet, and you can find him on the Twitters at Joshua Hall, that's H-O-L. But he's also been writing about it at Alternet, and he had a great article today. We're short on time, but let's try to get to this very quickly. It was called, If the Top 1% Hadn't Ripped Off Trillions, You'd Likely Be Making More, You'd Likely Be Making Thousands of Dollars More Right Now. It starts this way. The corporate media appear to be obsessed with the idea that the Occupy Wall Street movement doesn't have a cohesive message. Of course, that misses the point. As Nathan Schneider wrote in Yes Magazine, quote, more than demanding any particular policy proposal, the occupation is reminding Wall Street what real democracy looks like, a discussion among people, not a contest of money, unquote. And Joshua goes on to write, and despite the hand-wringing about the movement's supposed lack of focus, it does have a simple-to-understand message that fits neatly on a bumper sticker. Okay, I'll bite, Josh. What's that message?
Well, bad message is that we are the 99%. And, you know, I'm a nerdy guy, so I wanted to actually dig into what that means. And I took a database of American income, national income, that goes back to 1913. And I said, like, what is this top 1% of households? And what I found was really remarkable. If you look from the end of World War II through the time that Reagan came into office in 1980, the top 1% averaged 10% of our nation's income. This is the top 1% of households, mm-hmm. not individuals. Mm-hmm. And then something shifted dramatically during the Reagan administration. So by the end of the Reagan administration, the top 1% was taking 15.5% of our national income. And that accelerated. That continued to accelerate until 2008, the last year of the series. Mm-hmm. If you look at the last 10 years, the top 1% have taken in 20.04%, twice as much as they did in the post-war era. And, you know, we hear a lot about conservatives pining away for this, you know, better days in America in the 1950s and the 1960s. The bottom line is that the 99%, you know, we are the 99%. We were sharing 90% of the nation's income mm-hmm. throughout that period. And if you look at the year before the crash, the top 1% was taking in 23.5% of our income, and we were sharing the rest. And if you look at this, you know, this is what we talk about when we talk about stagnant wages for 30 years. You know, this has not happened by an accident. It's not anything that is intrinsic to capitalism, and it's not because the top 1% have somehow become smarter or no. better looking or harder working. This is about real policies that lead to the upward redistribution of our income.
Yeah, redistribution of our income. That's what the folks on the right are worried about. But they're the ones who are redistributing it up to them. And as you write in this article, excuse me, had Americans' productivity that they held in the 1980, had that stayed the same, that middle-class families would be making $12,500 more per year. Listen, I got to get out. Josh, great article, though. Check it out at Alternate. Joshua Holland, if top 1% hadn't ripped off trillions, you'd be making thousands of dollars more right now. Joshua Holland, thank you, sir, for your time. Stay safe out there in San Francisco.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
You bet. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. Mike Malloy himself joins us right after this break. Stay with us. Mike Malloy Show, very special edition of the Malloy Show, Occupation Nation continues. It is I, Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and occupier of your public airwaves tonight here on the Mike Malloy Show, as Mike is off and leading the occupation out there in Washington, D.C. Very quickly, our chat rooms are open and lively. Come on by and occupy them yourself at bradblog.com. A lot of folks in there, very lively, doing my best to keep up as well as I can. You can also Twitter us at The Brad Blog. We would love to hear from you. And next hour, it's all occupation all the time. We love to hear from folks, leaving the third hour open all week this week for occupiers around the nation, around the globe. I want to hear what's going on. I want to hear from you guys. And occasionally, we'll let a wingnut in to tell us how he's been conned. So that'll be 877-520-1150 will be our number in that third hour, 877-520-1150. If you want to spread it around the encampments, do so now. And also very shortly, we're going to be joined by Nancy Toby, author of Hands-On Elections, an informational handbook for running real elections using real paper ballots counted by real people. If you can imagine such a thing. Before we go to her, though, we're going to check in with the boss here, calling us from Washington, D.C. Mike Malloy joins us right here on The Mike Malloy Show from The Occupation. Hey, brother, how you doing out there?
Doing great, Brad. Doing great.
Are you staying out of jail, first thing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, not because we haven't tried, but we closed down the... The headquarters of the Chamber of Commerce in D.C. today breached the police lines, and most of the people in the national headquarters of the Chamber of Commerce hostage for a while.
What?
Until, frankly, we got kind of bored.
Well, no,
continued.
Well, now you didn't really hold them hostage, Mike, right?
Well, they were afraid to come outside. I mean, call it what you want, but they were afraid to come out. You know, when you're surrounded by 3,000 people chanting, "What does democracy look like? This is what democracy looks like," and carrying signs. Well, see, let me set the stage for you. The Chamber of Commerce office here, the national headquarters, they have a huge banner draped across the facade of their building. I mean, it's a huge banner,
mm-hmm.
and it says jobs, jobs, jobs.
Oh.
You're supposed to go to this Chamber of Commerce website. Well, that's a provocation, man, because the Chamber of Commerce is not into creating jobs.
No.
What they're into is that capitalist horse hockey that the Chamber of Commerce is into. So we just decided to challenge them, or I didn't decide it. I went along with the crowd. But anyway, that was at the end of about 4 hours of some real, real intense stage work by everybody who was involved in either speaking or doing music. Like I said, my estimate was anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 people. And then we finally met up later on in the day with the Occupy Washington group.
You know, I think they were probably inside the Chamber of Commerce shredding the Brad Friedman file. They got a really big one. So 3,000 people. Now, how many of those folks, are they sticking around, or is this like one of the occupations, or is this...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, tonight, for the people who want to, I'm not at Freedom Plaza right now, but I'm heading back there in about 20 minutes. And if you want to camp in Freedom Plaza tonight, the October2011.org organization and the Occupy Washington organization, such as they are,
mm-hmm.
there are no permits to camp in this in Freedom Plaza. So the people who are going to camp there tonight, and they're at least 1,000, are running the risk of arrest. Now, I'm not sure how the D.C. police are going to handle this, but I'm going to go back over there in about 20 minutes. I think our permit to be there ran out,
uh-huh.
matter of fact, about 11 minutes ago. So I'm going to go back over, and I'm not camping out tonight. I just I'm sorry. I've got to lay down in a bed. And I didn't bring my camping gear with me.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how it's going to wind up tonight, but the the energy, Brad, it was so high, and I think this is one of those occupations that's going to continue. And I would just strongly advise the power structure in this country to understand what is happening. And if they can't understand it, it puts them at a disadvantage. This is a movement that has truly started from the ground up. It truly is not all that organized. And its goals are very simple. Stop corporate ownership. That's all.
Now, is it, would you say it's, you mean, is it stop corporate ownership of our country, of our laws? I mean, is it anti...
Corporate ownership of the Congress,
uh-huh.
corporate ownership of our medical delivery system, corporate ownership of just about everything in the country everything has been monetized down to the point where they just about have monetized our soul.
Yep.
And I think what these movements are demanding is that, first of all, the capitalist system is broken. Now, a lot of people may disagree with that, and all I would say is take a look around you.
Mm.
If this is not broken, what is?
Mm.
I'm not talking about entrepreneurship. I'm not talking about small businesses. I'm talking about predatory capitalism. And I think what most of the people involved in these movements understand is that it's a broken system that is trying to continue to operate. A lot of the street demonstrations will depict zombies. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good depiction of what capitalism is. It is the kind of the living dead that are still operating and still controlling things. So the goal here is to end this corporate destruction, to end it and not reform it, not change it, not make it into a nice zombie, but to get rid of it and replace it with a different system.
And you're going to head back on over to Freedom Plaza to check out what's going on. All right, well, do me a favor. Actually, I don't know if you have the number. I'll give it out because we've been leaving the third hour open to hear from occupiers. We'd love to hear from folks in D.C., and I don't know if you have anything to write on, but let them know. 877.
I'm standing out on the street corner.
All right.
I don't have anything to write with, Brad.
Okay. Well, hopefully we'll get the word out. Hopefully people are listening out there via Sirius XM. Our number is 877-520-1150. We'd love to hear from folks. And, of course, Mike, give us a shout back if it looks like there's trouble, if it looks like the police are moving in or anything like that, so we can cover it here live. But I will say that last night, Mike, you know I like to let in the wingnut callers every now and again because I enjoy playing with them. And one of the guys said, well, if they were serious, they would be out there demonstrating in Washington, D.C. instead. I said, well, you jackass, they are. They're going out there. That's what Mike's doing. So,
this twin axis of evil, it has two main nests. One is, quote, Wall Street, unquote, which is the financial services industry, the nest of capitalism. And the second nest is here in Washington, D.C., a government that is a wholly owned subsidiary of capitalism, of predatory capitalism. So there are two nests of these monsters, and both of them have to be seriously attacked. And I'm not talking about with sticks and crowbars and weapons. I'm talking about attacking them with the kind of resistance that Mario Savio has talked about, that Gandhi has talked about, that Dr. King has talked about, and that is a strong civil disobedience coupled with a respectful, passive resistance. And when you do that, you cannot be defeated.
And I'll tell you what, you guys are scaring the hell out of them. You really are. The folks on the right are just flipping out. So keep up the good work, brother. Stay safe out there. And
all right, I'll do it, Brad.
Give us a shout if there's any trouble. Otherwise, travel safe, and you will be back in the chair behind the mic on Monday, right?
I will indeed. Thanks a lot, Brad.
Thank you, brother. All right, Mike Malloy out there in Washington, D.C. OccupyWashingtonDC.org or October2011.org. They'd love to see you there. We'd love to hear from you in the next hour. As I said, we're going to open up the lines to the occupiers, 877-520-1150. Taking a quick break here. Coming back with Nancy Toby hand counting your elections. Damn it. Mike, Brad, in for Mike.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show, standing up for your rights. As you stand up with us here in Occupation Nation, again, folks who know me, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, who know my work, know that I've been covering for years problems with electronic voting machines that are, prone to failure, that are easily manipulated, that even when they work right, you don't know if they did work right. Certainly on touchscreen voting machines that millions of Americans will use next year, and also on paper ballot optical scan systems, which have been shown time and again to be hackable. If you see HBO's Emmy-nominated Hacking Democracy, you can see a paper ballot election that is flipped. via the optical scanner. You would never know it was flipped unless you bothered to count the actual paper ballots. So why don't we just count them in the first place? You know, have human beings do this in front of the entire community? Well, in some places they do. And this seems to me to be the only solution so far that I've been able to find for real self-governance, real overseeable elections by we the people. And my next guest has been working on exactly that now for many years up in New Hampshire, where some 40% of the towns count their elections, count their paper ballots in front of everybody on election night at the precinct, all parties watching, video cameras rolling, results posted before ballots move anywhere. That would be Nancy Toby from New Hampshire. She's co-founder and former chair of Democracy for New Hampshire. She's founder and chair of New Hampshire Fair Elections Committee. She's on a board member of Black Box Voting and an advisor to the Election Defense Alliance. And her book is Hands-On Elections, an information handbook for running real elections using real paper ballots counted by real people. Well, my Lord, imagine that. Hey, Nancy, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Brad. How are you?
I'm doing great. And I'm, you know, I'm so glad to have you because last night we had on Roger Johnston from Argonne National Labs, who brought us the latest, just the latest new way to hack an electronic voting system. In this case, it was with $26 in parts would allow you to control an electronic voting system from up to half a mile away. No matter how no matter how many times I look at this issue, I see no other solution out there other than hand counting paper ballots in front of the people. That's what you've been calling for years. Why doesn't this happen anywhere else seemingly but New Hampshire?
Well, actually it does happen throughout the nation, Brad. You know, Wisconsin, oddly enough, is one of the states that still has, or had, mm-hmm. when I collected the data back in 2008-ish, mm-hmm. Had a lot of hand count precincts still in existence, mm-hmm. and we have them in Texas. We have them scattered all around the nation. The problem is that they don't, even though there are a lot of polling places that still have publicly observable vote counts, they don't account for a large percentage of the ballots being counted because mm-hmm. they tend to be smaller polling places, smaller precincts. And, you know, so in New Hampshire, for example, we at last count, we were somewhere around 40% of our polling places were still counting the ballots by hand, but that was only accounting for less than 15% of the ballots.
Now, is that because these are small towns? Is hand counting paper ballots in front of actual people something that just won't work in larger cities? It can only be done in small rural communities?
Well, that's a really good question, Brad. I'm glad you asked. Hand counting can be done everywhere in the nation, and in fact, within recent memory for most of us alive, it was done every place in the nation. And it does not need to be a rural environment in order to use this voting system. In fact, most, you know, in other words, it doesn't matter how many people live in a given city.
Uh-huh.
What matters is how many ballots are passing through any given precinct or polling place.
And go ahead.
Well, the average number of registered voters in any given precinct in throughout the nation is 1,000 or less. In fact, most places, New Hampshire does not limit the number of registered voters in any given polling place, but most states do. And so take New York, for example, does not allow more than 1,130 registered voters in a given precinct. And so I think basically what that tells you is that everywhere where you could conduct hand count elections very easily.
So it's not the size of the city, it's the size of the precinct itself. All right, I got a lot more questions for you, and I'm also going to invite calls because I know there's a lot of skeptics out there. 877-520-1150 is our phone number. 877-520-1150. If you have questions for Nancy Tobey, author of Hands On Elections, an information handbook for running real elections using real paper ballots counted by real people. We're going to take a quick break here, but I want to come back and find out, okay, if you make the precincts smaller, it certainly has the benefit of reducing lines for voters, it would seem, in big elections. But how about the length of the ballots? Because that's what I hear from people. Oh, the ballots are too long out here. We couldn't possibly do it in California, Los Angeles, New York, etc. We're going to find out from Nancy Tobey right after this. You're listening to Brad on the Mike Malloy Show.
They said vote in the election, it's what good people do. We've got this new machine, amazing but it's true. Just touch the screen a few times, it computes your vote for you. And you don't even need any paper. They swore it couldn't crash, the program couldn't fail. There wasn't any reason to keep a paper trail. But the counters all went crazy, we were sold a fairy tale. Now it's hopeless 'cause they left us without paper. You can scream, you can plead, you can argue all night. They may be wrong, you may be right. Use a voting machine to settle the fight. Just be sure it records your vote on paper.
No, you can't use a voting machine. Even if you vote on paper, you gotta count the ballots in front of the people so that we can all know that the vote has been counted accurately. Is that too much to ask? Apparently it is in most places around the country. Not in a few towns in New Hampshire and Wisconsin and some other places around the country, but not enough places. Everyone relies on secret vote counting by computer. And then they just trust that nothing could possibly go wrong. Nancy doesn't. Nancy Tobey, my guest, does not trust that. She's the author of Hands-On Elections, an information handbook for running real elections using real paper ballots counted by real people. A lot of people say it's impossible. It can't happen. It's going back to the past. Computers are our future. I don't think so. Our number is 877-520-1150. If you have a question for Nancy Tobey, a question about how hand counting paper ballots work, 877-520-1150. Okay, Nancy, before we went to the break, we were talking about the fact that it's not really the size of a city that makes a difference. It's the size of the precinct. If you don't have that many voters at any one precinct, A, it's easier for them to vote. They don't get stuck in lines. But then you don't have that many ballots to count because we're talking about counting at the actual precinct, not a centrally, you know, I think people have visions of Florida 2000 dancing in their heads, you know, with millions of ballots being counted by, you know, eight people in a room. We're talking about at each precinct. So if it's the size of the precinct that matters, what about the length of the ballot? That's what I hear all the time from people say, oh, we can't do that out here in all Los Angeles. Our ballots are just too many pages. How do you respond to that criticism, Nance?
Well, I will respond directly to that, Brad, but I want to also lay down sort of a fundamental principle before I respond specifically to that challenge. And, you know, every voting system is going to present challenges that need to be met in order for it to operate smoothly. We've certainly seen a fair share of challenges with the newest solution, the electronic voting systems. And so, you know, my answer is that you need to identify those challenges and address them in any kind of logical problem-solving mode and method. But the fundamental principle that I want to lay down here is that we need to be able to observe the votes being counted in order to know that the election is true and the results are valid and real. We actually need to see those votes being counted. So once you understand that this is the fundamental principle that and requirement that must be met in order to have true democratic elections, then you line up your challenges and knock them down one by one in order to reach that objective.
Well, let me challenge it. Let me challenge you there, Nancy. Why do we need to see our votes being counted? Why not? And I'm not being facetious here. You know, we use computers for all sorts of things. If we have a hand-marked paper ballot, why not just run it through a computer? What's the concern? We can check a few of them after the election. You know, spot check a few to make sure that the machines are counting them accurately. What's wrong with that?
Well, there are several things wrong with that. First of all, secret vote counting is illegal in the United States of America. Anyone who is a student of history knows the famous quote attributed to Stalin, and I did find it in his biography, which was that he doesn't care who comes to vote. What he cares about is who is counting the votes. And Stalin engineered a very wonderful system of secret vote counting, concealed vote counting, so that people would scurry off and, you know, come back and say, here are the results, folks. And in this respect, voting becomes, for us, the opiate of the masses.
But
everybody trots off to the voting place, feels they're doing their civic duty, and we are at peace. You know, we don't have a revolution in the country. We don't have a bloodful revolution. But in fact, our votes don't matter. We're just being assuaged and sort of, you know.
But if they allow people to watch those ballots running through that optical scanner, that's public counting, isn't it? They're not counting it in secret. Everybody gets to watch. You can watch it go right through that optical scan system, no?
Well, you certainly can see a piece of paper being put into a computer, and you can see a polling tape spit out. What you cannot see is the votes being counted. So in a truly observable vote count using paper ballots, which is the system that we have for voting today, you would actually be sitting at a table where the ballots are in front of you, and any member of the public can see those ballots being counted. They can check and make sure that the correct vote that has been cast by the voter is being correctly tallied and tabulated. So that's the difference. You cannot see what's going on inside of a computer, and computers can be programmed to do whatever the programmer wants them to do.
And they can. And so with touch screens, you certainly can't see them. You don't even know if they recorded it your vote correctly, much less counted it correctly. With a paper ballot, at least you have a paper ballot. You know if it's hand-marked, that you know it reflects the voter's intent. But again, unless you count that paper ballot with your own eyeballs, it's secret vote counting inside of a computer. So it kind of begs the question, why don't we just count it in the first place? I think that's the point you're making here, correct?
Well, that is the point I'm making, and it's a very simple point. I mean, I want to tell you, you know, I had spoken to the man who was the House counsel for Bob Ney when they wrote the Help America Vote Act.
Congressman Bob Ney, Republican from Ohio, yes.
Correct, convicted criminal.
Yes, he is now. Yes.
Yes, and the man who was the House counsel at the time, who actually drafted the Help America Vote Act for these people, for the four, doesn't matter who they were, but he had said to me, you know, what they're trying to do in America today with these electronic voting systems and with the legislation like the Help America Vote Act is they're trying to complexify our elections to the point where nobody knows what's going on. And what I'm trying to say is that elections do not need to be complexified. They need to be simplified. This is a fourth grade math process of sorting and counting the votes. That's all it is. You've got to tabulate them correctly. You've got to manage the process. You've got to manage the people doing the process. You've got to manage the counting, manage the reconciliation. It's a management and accounting process that all of us can do. But getting back to the reasons, other than what I think and I hope is obvious to everybody, the reason that you cannot accept election results if you haven't actually seen them being counted. It's like giving somebody the ballots and having them run away to a closed room and coming out and saying, here are your results. That's what we're doing. So common sense should tell all of us that this system is ridiculous. But in addition to that, it's illegal. It is not legal to have concealed vote counting in America. And this is implicit in the U.S. Constitution, which gives we the people sovereignty and self-governance and the right to observe the processes of government and governance. And it is explicitly stated in some of our state constitutions. In the New Hampshire state constitution, we are told the votes must be sorted and counted in open meeting. This is said in several constitutions throughout the nation.
Yeah, but see, the problem is they've redefined, you know, counting. They feel that if you put it through the paper ballot through a computer, that is the equivalent of counting as they see it. And I stand with you, Nancy. I think they're wrong. I think maybe you could call that tabulation or something, but you know, it is secret vote counting. So, and I got a bunch of folks on the phone who want to ask you some questions, and I got to get to a break. So let me run through a couple of quick things. One, I veered you off the topic of the length of the ballot. Does that make a difference in places where they have really lengthy ballots? That's what I hear from critics all the time. So how do you respond directly to that question, Nancy?
It absolutely makes a difference, and that is one of the ways that they have been complexifying our elections. In referendum states, you're going to have very lengthy ballots like you have in California. In New Hampshire, where some of the towns have moved away from a town meeting and put the town articles on the ballot, they have lengthy ballots. And those become that became a rationalization for using electronic voting. But again, if we go back to the fundamental principle that the vote count must be publicly observable in order to be valid and true and real, then you recognize that you have a problem if you have complex ballots that are extremely long and difficult to use in a publicly observable count. So once you identify that as a problem, then you need to find an appropriate solution to allow you to count those referendum articles, to count the items on the ballot, but to do it in a way that meets the constitutional requirements for publicly observable elections.
So start with the principle of that these need to be observable counting, and then figure out how to solve it. Add more counting teams, whatever you have to do, but start with the notion that this is our democracy, our self-governance requires that we are able to oversee our own elections. Nancy, Toby, hang on. I got to get to a quick break here. We're going to come back, take some calls at 877-520-1150. Speaking with Nancy Toby, author of Hands-On Elections, an information handbook for running real elections using real paper ballots counted by real people. Oh, man, would that be nice. You're listening to Brad on the Mike Malloy Show. And, oh, occupation calls next hour. Stay with us. All right. For your eyes only, indeed, when it comes to paper ballots, your eyes will work much better than Diebold's eyes, as far as I'm concerned, as far as my guest Nancy Toby, author of Hands-On Elections, using real paper ballots counted by real people in real elections. Go figure. What a crazy idea. We've got a lot of calls, Nancy, Toby, that I want to get to here. People are lining up. Next hour, by the way, we're going to be back to the occupation. This is all of a same piece, by the way. This is your democracy. Stand up and fight for it. Nancy, you mind if we take some quick calls?
No, not at all.
All right, we're going to have to fly through a lot of them because we've only got a few minutes here to the top of the hour, but I want to get in as many folks as I can. 877-520-1150. Oh, Kevin in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Kevin, do you have a question or thought for Nancy Toby?
Yes, I do.
Bring
it. I've been involved in the election process here. I'm wondering, what would you say the first step would be for me to go to get that process started here in Colorado? And then dovetailing into that, I'm blind. So is your book out on audiobook by chance?
Great question, Kevin. Nancy, your thoughts?
Oh, I really wish I had it on audiobook, but I don't. But I'm glad you asked about what we can do, because we have a very simple solution. And it's called Protect the Count. That's the movement that we have going here in New Hampshire. And actually, it addresses some of the complexified ballots that we just talked about. And this is a movement where we are taking control at the local level. We recognize that Congress and the President and our Secretaries of State, the politicians, are not going to help us with this problem. They have too much of a vested interest in keeping it rigged, basically. And so we're taking it to the local level. And wherever you have home rule or local control, as we have in New Hampshire, where you can make decisions about the voting system at the local level, you can do what we're doing here, which is we are filing local ordinances, town ordinances, that are prohibiting concealed vote counting.
So pass a move. Nancy, I just want to get in as many because we're coming to the top of the hour. So push for passing a notion that you can't passing a law that you can't have concealed vote counting. And I would toss in the idea that I've been calling for, work with your election officials to start doing hand-counted paper ballot pilot programs. Try it out in one or two precincts at first. See how it works, how many people you need, how accurate it is, you know, in comparison to machines, and so on and so forth.
Nancy, is that book or is that Protect the Movement? Is there a website for that?
We have a Facebook page called Protect the Count New Hampshire. Protect the Count NH on Facebook.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that call, Kevin. Appreciate it. Let me see if I can get to Flo in Florida. Very quickly, your question for Nancy Toby. Flo?
Hi, Brad. You know, I don't trust the voting here in Florida. We get up at 4 o'clock to go and vote, and we do all that. We have the paper trail, but then there sits that rotten machine. And I'm the only one that makes a comment about it. You know, I could stand there and count the votes. There aren't that many people in this precinct. I don't see what the problem is. And also, Florida is high in unemployment, high in foreclosures, yet we keep putting Republicans in.
Thanks for the thought, Flo. I don't think there was a question there, but there was a good point. Let me see if I get a question here as we come to the top of the hour with just a minute or so left. D in Ohio, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Do you have a question for Nancy Toby?
Yes, sir, I do. I'm on my lunch break, so I'll make this quick. We have an abundance of two things in this country. One, unemployment, and two, we have a lot of incarceration as well. Could we not, in fact, use the unemployed and the incarcerated to assist in the vote counting?
Great question. Thanks for that, Dee. Nancy, do we need to use the incarcerated, or do we have enough people who would show up to do this?
Well, I'm a big advocate of community-based elections, and when you have locally based elections and in your neighborhood, as we do here in New Hampshire, and it takes place in many places around the country, then you have community members volunteering to count the ballots, and then you have a real community spirit. We make a party out of the election, and I really advocate for community-based local elections.
And it is a party. You've got some videos up on your YouTube channel where you can see how this happens and the great spirit of the folks who turn out to oversee their own democracy. Your YouTube channel, Nancy, is Do you have it there? Or where is it here?
Hands-on elections.
There we go. YouTube.com/hands-on-elections. You can also get more information at Facebook, Protect the Count NH. And if you'd like a link to her book, Hands-on Elections, an informational handbook for running real elections using real paper ballots counted by real people, we have the link at bradblog.com. Do you have a simple link that you can point folks to, Nance?
Well, it is up on Amazon. You can find it on Election Defense Alliance. There's a link to it on the sidebar on the electiondefensealliance.org website.
Nancy Toby, a great patriot fighting for your democracy and mine, for all of us, right, left, it doesn't matter. We need to count the votes and know that they have been counted accurately. If you're on the line with a question for Nancy, hang on. I got to let her go. But if you want to hang on, I'll take your calls in the next hour, along with occupation calls. We'd love to hear from you from around the country. Nancy Toby, thank you very much for all your hard work. Keep it up. And I suspect we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Brad.
All righty. Good night. 877-520-1150. Give us a shout. The occupation continues. It's 6 minutes after the hour. Welcome back to your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and occupier tonight of your public airwaves. Right here on the Mike Malloy Show, drafted into duty from bradblog.com as Mike is out leading the crowds. We checked in with Mike Malloy earlier, where he checked in with us from Washington, D.C., where he is helping to get the occupation started. You can get more information at OccupyWashingtonDC.org. He said that there was 2,000 or 3,000 folks who marched over and pretty much shut down my good friends at the Chamber of Commerce today. Oh, well, man. So these occupations are going all across the country, and I want to hear from folks who are occupying anywhere you may be. 877-520-1150. If you'd like to get into the show here, if you're hanging on the line with a question from our last hour, hang in there if you can. I'm going to try to get to everyone. I want to hear from the occupiers and, as usual, the skeptics. Like you, you know, Tea Party folks who used to think that standing up for your rights was great, but now all of a sudden you're like Sean Hannity and you think it's a grave danger to this nation. So we're going to get to those calls in a minute, and I'm going to get to the green news in a second, although, you know, I was tweeting. I was using my iPhone there to send out a tweet that we were going to be taking calls here from the occupiers. You know, it can't underscore the tragedy of losing Steve Jobs yesterday. Ironically, I found out about it, of course, on my iPhone, which is kind of sad when you think about it. But that's how I got the news. But as I was tweeting that we were going to, I said, I want to hear from occupiers around the nation. Well, I love my iPhone. I got to say, I love my iPhone. But this damn spell checker. Imagine I said, what's that?
Autocorrect.
Autocorrect. Yeah. Because I put out the tweet. I said, I want to hear from occupiers around the nation.
And what did it say?
I want to hear from octopuses around the nation.
Oh, well.
So I would like to hear from any octopuses out there. If you can dial your phone, 877-520-1150 is our number. Otherwise, if you're an occupier, we'd like to hear from you. Real quick, we're going to play the Green News Report here. Dez is our producer. Desi Doyen. Hi, Dez.
Hey, how are you?
She's our producer. She's also my lovely co-host and the managing editor of the Green News Report, heard on fine progressive radio stations around this nation. And if it's not on your progressive radio station, call them and ask them to add it. You can hear it anytime, of course, on iTunes at greennews.bradblog.com. It's a 6-minute radio feature, which we think is kind of fun, covers some important stuff. So, Des, these occupations that are going on, they are Give us the green angle just to set up today's Green News Report here.
Well, there are quite a few groups, as you know, around the country. Hundreds of these are popping up, these Occupy various locations. Mm-hmm. And we're finding now that because it is such a youthful movement, this is being driven by the young people. A lot of them are already climate activists. They're well aware that in the next 20, 30 years, when the real effects of climate change are going to start really hitting the fan, they are aware that they're the ones that are going to be bearing the brunt of all of the carbon dioxide emissions that have been going into the atmosphere. So they're climate activists, and they're also seeing, I think, the overtaking of the political and the basically every realm by corporations, especially the Koch brothers. A lot of those that have been interviewed specifically reference the Koch brothers.
Curses the Koch brothers. And we're going to talk, by the way, Greg Palast is going to join us tomorrow night. We're going to have more on the Koch brothers. But, and what's so annoying here is that, the key to to so many problems are green jobs, renewable energy, this new industry that would put so many people to work. Okay, we're running late. Let me get to the Green News Report from today. Thanks, Des. Good job.
Thank you.
Then back with your calls on the occupation.
It's Thursday, October 6, 2011.
We have 2.4 million green jobs, according to Brookings, right now, and the Republicans want to get rid of them.
Coal is a drag on the economy.
Our current Arctic capabilities are very limited.
So, of course, offshore drilling in the Arctic is a go. Surprise! Koch Industries will profit from the Keystone XL pipeline after saying they wouldn't. Plus,
we need to have robust, drastic climate change policy.
Occupy Wall Street protesters want to save the future with action on clean energy and climate change.
Silly Occupy Wall Street protesters. All of that and more straight ahead. From Bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
One day, our environment will get bad enough that we'll want to act on it. Maybe when Florida sinks underwater, then we'll take action. Perhaps by giving Nana water wings and a can of shark repellents.
Poor Nana. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we are not prepared for an oil spill in the Arctic. That's what the military has been warning us. It's an issue of national security, so of course we're listening to them. And we're going to do it anyway.
Yep. 2 months ago, U.S. Coast Guard Admiral Robert Papp testified to the Senate on oil drilling in the Arctic, saying that the federal government is not prepared to respond to an oil spill of any size.
We do not have any coastal or shoreside infrastructure. We do not have a seasonal base to even hangar our aircraft or to sustain our crews. Imagine if we had to mount a major pollution response. We'd have to create our own infrastructure.
So naturally, on Monday, the Obama administration announced it is moving forward with approvals for offshore oil drilling leases off the coast of Alaska.
Oh, brother.
It's a major victory for oil companies in the battle over the Arctic. The permits were originally issued by the Bush administration in 2008. Environmental groups say the oil industry's oil spill preparedness in the Arctic is ridiculously inadequate.
And so when do we have any victories that are not for the oil companies?
Yeah, got me.
We have 80,000 coal miners in America. Now, God bless them. They are America's heroes. They risk their lives to keep the lights cut on. There are 80,000 of them. We have 2.4 million green jobs, according to Brookings, right now, and the Republicans want to get rid of them.
That was Van Jones on HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher last week on the surge of clean energy jobs, the fastest growing job sector in the United States, even as the number of coal mining jobs continues to fall. Coal companies have claimed in the last month that new EPA air pollution regulations will force them to close coal-fired power plants and cut jobs. But the Associated Press reports that the closures are actually due more to declining coal reserves in Central Appalachia. All of the easy coal is gone in the region, and what remains is less profitable and more destructive to extract.
But let's blame Obama and the EPA. Yep, that's the ticket.
But even more shocking, a new economic study shows that the true costs of coal are a serious drag on the U.S. economy. Yale University researchers calculated that every $1 of cheap electricity from coal costs $2 in damage to the U.S. in higher health care costs. Let's say that again. Every $1 of electricity from coal does $2 in damage to the U.S. due to higher health care costs because of air pollution from coal-fired power plants.
Yeah, that's only if you listen to those pointy-headed academics who actually study these things.
Notably, the pointy-headed academics did not examine other external costs like taxpayer-funded cleanup of land and water pollution. More shady dealings with the billionaire Koch brothers right after a bombshell Bloomberg News report on Monday that the U.S. petrochemical giant Koch Industries, owned by the secretive right-wing billionaire Koch brothers, flouted the U.S. trade embargo by using a foreign subsidiary to hide sales of equipment to Iran. Now, Koch Industries has been caught using the same dodge regarding the controversial Keystone XL pipeline proposed for the Midwest. InsideClimate.com reports a new investigation shows that Koch Industries told the U.S. Congress they had no financial interest in the pipeline. But regulatory filings in Canada show a Koch subsidiary told regulators there it has, quote, a direct and substantial interest in the pipeline to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars.
Unbelievable. You're saying that Kochs are liars or criminals after they've been shown to bribe foreign countries, after they've been shown to do business with terrorist nations? Now they're lying to the U.S.? I can't believe it.
The billionaire Koch brothers and the proposed Keystone Pipeline are also targets of the Occupy Wall Street movement and the hundreds of protest actions blossoming in cities around the country. In interviews with ThinkProgress.org, Occupy Wall Street protesters tied together the astronomical profits of the fossil fuel companies and Wall Street with corporate cash and politics and the climate change denial industry.
We know that Wall Street has given millions and millions of dollars to our candidates, you know, are basically buying votes. We know that Koch brothers, big corporations like BP and ExxonMobil, are large funders of, you know, climate change denial.
There's a new public hearing on the Keystone XL pipeline at the State Department on Friday. There are rallies scheduled for that and around the country over the weekend.
Check our website, greennews.bradblog.com, for much more on all of our stories today. And while you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report to help us continue to occupy your public airwaves. Download us anytime at iTunes, listen to us on your smart device via Stitcher Radio, and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Indeed, the rising continues right here on the Mike Malloy Show. 877-520-1150 is our phone number. We want to hear from you occupiers out there. Occupy Wall Street, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, anywhere you are. Give us a shout. 877-520-1150. These are your public airwaves. Occupy them. Use them before you lose them more than you already have. Your calls, all straight ahead. Brad, in for Malloy.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times, they are a-changing.
They are changing indeed. Pay attention. Wall Street is paying attention. You bet your bottom dollar the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is paying attention. I know Fox News is paying attention, and they don't like what they see. They don't like the idea that people are starting to get it now. They're starting to realize how they've been lied to, screwed over by folks like the Chamber of Commerce, Fox News, Koch Industries, and all the rest. And at some point, what they're really worried about is the Tea Party is going to figure it out. No, not the liars at the top, but the rank and file, the folks who really did have a reason to be ticked off when they saw AIG taking all of our, taking all that bailout and then giving away these $1 million bonuses. There was a reason to be ticked off back then. Of course, that was before the whole movement was co-opted. Well, guess what? Those people who were ticked off then, we got your movement right here. Find a square to occupy near you. And I'd love to hear from you if you are out there occupying. 877-520-1150. Let us know where you are, what you need, how we can help. That's what we're here for. 877-520-1150. Brad in for Mike. All right. And let's try to get through as many as we can. We got some folks who wanted to talk last hour about voting issues. So let me run through a few of those as quickly as I can here. Tom in San Francisco, listening, I hope, on the Great Green 960. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Tom.
Yes, I am. And if you want to help, get me a job. But the other one.
Yeah.
But I remember an old Mission Impossible. I'm old enough to remember as a child watching this Mission Impossible where they fix a voting machine. It's a lever type. It's got these counter wheels on the inside.
Right.
And they did it in very simplistic fashion because everybody had to vote, so they knew how many votes were going to come in. So they set back, you know, they minused off the votes for the person they didn't want to win.
Yeah.
And transfer them over to the other side.
Right. Well, that's exactly. Yeah, go ahead.
And I've just often wondered, why don't we get someone like Penn & Teller to show just how this anything can be accomplished?
Well, you know what? We have seen this, Tom. I had mentioned earlier HBO's documentary, Hacking Democracy. Go to hackingdemocracy.com. Yeah. This is one of the ways that the system in that documentary, Emmy-nominated documentary, was actually gamed. They started with -5 votes. It was a mock election that they did, and the hacker was able to change the card so that it was a yes or no question, so that
sure.
Yes had -5 and no had +5. So then when they did their test at the beginning of the election and they said, how many votes are on this machine? Oh, 0 votes. Because one guy started with -5, the other one started with +5. And in this case, they were actually able to flip the election, a paper ballot election, in a way that you would never know unless you bothered to count the ballots. The same thing, I think, that you're talking about. And by the way, Al Gore in Florida in 2000 received -16,022 votes.
Yeah,
in down in Volusia County.
And just for people not doing accounting, you know, in the 2010 with the TARP money, and they gave out $144 billion in bonuses.
Yep.
Oh, we got to retain the best and the brightest, ran it into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I sat down one day and I just looked at the math, and I don't have it exactly in front of me for mea culpa on that one, but it was something like if you had $35,000 a year jobs, right, and you wanted to stretch it out over 10 years, it would be 400,000 jobs.
Yeah. Well, it's a ridiculous.
Hey, guess what? You got the money.
Yeah.
You just don't want to give it up.
Oh, exactly. No, had they given all of that money to we the people instead of socializing the corporations, you know, that's who the Chamber of Commerce is. They're socialists. They want to reap the privates profitably and the profits privately. And then have the government bail them out when they're in trouble. Tom, I got to get to a bunch of other calls.
Take care.
Thanks, brother. Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. Let me get to. All right, I'm going to get to all the other callers after the break. We had a caller who could not stay on, wanted to ask about instant runoff voting, and I guess wanted to know if I thought that was a good idea. No, I do not. Instant runoff voting, ranked choice voting, terrible idea. We can't add 1+1+1 transparently in this country. And now you want to add, vote for first place, second place, third place, this insane algebra that has to happen for instant runoff voting. I understand politically why people want to do it, but until we can add 1+1+1 in front of the public so that everyone knows it was counted accurately, no thank you on instant runoff voting. Much more straight ahead. Brad in for Malloy.
Been dazed and confused for so long, it's not true.
We want to hear from you occupiers out there around the country, 877-520-1150. Where are you? How many folks are there? What do you need? How can we help? And thank you, 877-520-1150. Let's hear from you occupiers. And if you're on the line right now, hang on. We got a bunch of folks going to try to get to everyone, occupier or not. Where was I here? Julie, there we go. Julie in Minneapolis. Hey, Julie, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Thank you. I want to throw out a few quick facts and ask your opinion about something. But first of all, you know, I would love to hear a list of all the products that the Koch brothers produce. I just heard on Ring of Fire they make Northern bathroom tissues and Brawny paper towels, and I was going out shopping that day, and I crossed it off my list.
Yeah, well, Georgia-Pacific, anything that's made by Georgia-Pacific for a start, that's the Koch brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's helpful. I like the idea of expressing myself with my money, you know?
Yep, good idea.
Because
that's what they do with your money, so you might as well do the same. All right, go ahead.
Turnabout Fair Play. Tomorrow morning, Friday at 9 a.m. in downtown Minneapolis, OccupyMN.org. It's going to be in front of the courthouse. There's a plaza. But, you know, it sounds to me like there's a lot of squelching going on. And I'm going to ask your opinion about something. They're not allowed to have any tents at all or any structures. They can sleep overnight on the North Plaza and the South Plaza as long as no traffic is interrupted. But part of the squelching, supposedly this is going to have to end by Monday a.m. So that's just from Friday a.m. to Monday a.m.
Yeah, well, you know what? Those are their rules. And I guess it's up to the occupiers if they want to follow them. You can sleep overnight, but you can't use a tent? Really?
Yeah,
really?
So that's why I wanted to ask your opinion. Yeah. Now, this is what happened in San Francisco. They made them take down their tents, right?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, do you think this might be a new nationwide response among local authorities in dealing with the protests?
Well, I mean, they're probably relying on, you know, whatever local ordinances are already in place, in theory. Yeah. You know, I would say, as Joshua Holland said, you know, pointed out earlier, most of these police are members of unions who are most likely sympathetic to the occupiers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd love to see, I want to see the you know, the first police department around the country saying, no, we're not going to enforce these laws. Instead, we are going to stand on the side of the occupiers. We're going to protect them and allow them to express, you know, their free speech. The fact that you might need a tent to stay overnight to express your free speech, oh, we can't have that. On the other hand, if you happen to be a corporation like the Koch brothers, you can spend, you know, $5 billion of your own money to affect, to pervert, to corrupt our elections. That's free speech that is perfectly protected. But, you know, staying in a plaza overnight in a tent trying to keep warm, oh, no, we can't have that. By the way,
Minnesota.
Yeah, no kidding. It's cold already up there, I'm guessing.
Well, it's been warm the last couple of days, but it's going to get cold fast.
Yeah, just very quick before I let you go here, some of their products, Angel Soft. These are Koch Brothers products. Angel Soft, okay. Brawny, Dixie, Mardi Gras, Quilted Northern,
right.
Soft and Gentle. Sparkle, Vanity Fair, Georgia-Pacific products. Those are just some of what they make. Go online and search for Koch Brothers products. You'll find them, and I leave it up to you if you want to buy them, particularly if you want to buy them and do a demonstration like a big guillotine and put some of those quilted northern paper towels into that guillotine. That'll get their attention. Julie, I got to run.
Thanks
for the call. Appreciate it. And by the way, the bradblog.com chat room is still rolling. After the show, maybe I'll go in there on video. If you wonder what I look like, be afraid. Let me go to, let's see, Dee Dee in San Leandro, California. Where's San Leandro? Leandro, Dee Dee?
It's 10 minutes away from Oakland.
Okay, so you're in Oakland. What's up, Dee Dee?
So I'm just, I was basically a person who was affected by the financial crisis.
in 2004 as a young person out of college, had a decent job and working for state government. I bought my first condo. I'd saved up my money, worked on my credit, did everything I was supposed to do. Then, you know, the whole deal with these ARM adjustable mortgages was not that you bought a house that you couldn't afford, but the idea is that you could refinance a couple years later. Well, you know what happened a couple years later? A couple years later, nobody would touch or refinance these loans, because as soon as I had my loan, it was passed on to another company and then to another company and another company. So I'm very supportive of what the occupiers are trying to do in order to bring attention to the issue. But my real concern, and I'm not a, you know, I'm definitely not a detractor, is just what is this going to actually do for the people who are, you know, are impacted by this? My mom's a teacher. She lost her home. And so we're all living together, supporting each other. Even though we make decent incomes, I mean, we're middle class people. We're still trying to recover because this is on our credit for 7 years. So you can't really do anything at that point in time. And I was a responsible citizen. I'm not one of those people who just, you know, was trying to, you know, I was in California, a young person, like the market's going up. I got a very minimalist condo. What I am hoping that will come out of this movement is some real tangibles of things that our government can take a look at, like, you know, maybe thinking about corporations in our amendment that aren't looked at as, you know, as individuals, but actually for what they are, as corporations.
Yeah, and I think your phone broke up a little bit there, but I think what you said was to look at amending the Constitution so that corporations are not recognized under this absurd idea that they are people. Is that what you essentially said?
Yeah, that's what I said. That I would look at is, you know, all these people who are impacted by the credit, you know, crisis.
Well,
now.
Listen,
I mean,
Didi, they are doing, I think, I don't have the location in front of me. I know there's obviously an Occupy San Francisco. I'm pretty sure there's an Occupy Oakland. Sounds like you've got some great ideas. This is your movement. Go to one of these occupations. Go to their general assemblies where they have this open process where you can bring up these points. This notion that somebody tweeted today, and I'm going to apologize for I can't remember who it was, but said, you know, I know what it was. It was a photo down in Austin at Occupy Austin. A sign was held up that said, "I'll believe corporations are people when Rick Perry executes one." You know, this notion that corporations have the same rights that you and I do is beyond insane, beyond absurd. Of course we should have a constitutional amendment to change that. But my point is to you, Didi, head on out to the occupation. Share this with the other people. This is your time. This is my time. This is our time. This is the citizens' time to start figuring all of this out. It is not going to come immediately. There has been, you know, 30 years of just people like, you know, working class folks taken for granted, stolen from. There's a lot that needs to change. This conversation needs to begin. And as I had read earlier from Josh Holland had quoted Nathan Schneider in Yes Magazine, saying more than demanding any particular policy proposal, the occupation is reminding Wall Street what real democracy looks like. A discussion among people, not a contest of money. So I think you make some great points. And you have brought those points to the airwaves. I thank you for that. And take them to an occupation near you. Seriously.
Well, thank you for listening. I appreciate it.
Thank you for making yourself heard. I appreciate that. Thanks, Didi. 877-520-1150. Oh, occupiers, we'd love to hear from you. 877-520-1150. Let me get to Tom in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Tom, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, Brad, how are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. I just wanted to welcome you into the realm of Tea Partiers.
Is that right?
Well, I would have to say so, because realistically, you guys are following the same motives that generated that movement in itself.
Now, of course, you're talking about the actual real Boston Tea Party that was an uprising against corporate and government collusion?
No, I'm actually talking about the movement that began a year and a half ago
that was had enough of dealing with a basically a tyrannical government.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember. Okay, it actually wasn't a year and a half. It was 2007. Huge demonstrations. People were throwing, fake tea into the harbor. Ron Paul and his supporters in 2007 who were saying, what Bush has done is absurd. The corporate control of this country is got to stop. Is that the Tea Party you're talking about?
Well, actually, you're at the second tier if you're identifying the corporate control.
Okay.
Because corporations get their autonomy through the government, don't they?
They are granted this autonomy. That's correct, and they should not be. I agree with
exactly.
You.
So wouldn't you have to cut the head of the snake off to kill it?
So what's the first level then?
Well, I would say you probably need to look at the government,
yeah,
the regulations that are set, and the loopholes that are set.
Not enough of them.
And the areas where a corporation can squirm itself into a position of taking advantage of its position.
You're right.
But, quite
I agree.
Frankly,
I agree.
Quite frankly, yeah, let's look at it from the perspective of what's a corporation there for. It is ultimately it's in business. It's there to make a profit.
That's right. It's not there to it's not there to create jobs. It's there to serve the shareholders and to have the top profits. Listen, Tom, I actually got to get to a break. I really enjoy this conversation, however, and when it comes to those regulations, I think you're against them. I'm just guessing, right? Rather than regulating these corporations so they all play by the rules, am I right?
I think that the corporations are married to the government.
Yep,
both of them
I agree.
Are in bed together, and
yep,
both of them need to be addressed.
Yep.
So realistically, both of them are pitting the left and the right at our level against each other. And
boom.
We need to wake up collectively
there you
together
go.
In order to change things.
I'm with you, brother. And so I'm going to say to you, you welcomed me to the Tea Party. I'm going to welcome you to the occupation. Thanks, Tom. We have found common ground.
Exactly.
Bring out those Tea Party folks. I'm not kidding, because they have been screwed. They have been abused. We're all in this thing together. Come on up and join the uprising, my friend.
You guys come to ours, we'll come to yours.
I don't actually have one. We all have this together. They're sitting out there now. Go stop on by and join them. Bring a bunch of tri-corner hats. They'll be happy to wear them along with you. Thanks, Tom. I do appreciate the call, brother.
Take care, man.
All right. I got to get out here. 877-520-1150. We got just a few more minutes if you want to try to get in. 877-520-1150. Occupy your airwaves. And, by the way, stop by Think Progress. Check out Lee Fong's article, Top 5 Reasons Why the Occupy Wall Street Protests Embody Values of the Real Boston Tea Party. Yeah. Got your Tea Party right here. Brad, in for Malloy. One more segment. Stay with us.
When I say that I'm okay, well, they look at me kind of strange. Surely you're not happy now, you no longer play the game.
I take two.
My thanks tonight to Joshua Holland of Alternet.org. Also to Nancy Toby, author of Hands-On Elections. And let's see, who else? Oh, yeah, engineer Tony Sorrentino here at LA's K-Talk AM 1150. The lovely, my lovely producer, Desi Doyen, and also the chat room hostess tonight, along with 4Earth, and I think Dale and GD Dean both got in late. Thanks, guys, over there at bradblog.com. We'll have it up for a few more minutes after the show is over. Maybe I'll turn on the video camera. And, of course, my thanks, as always, to Mike and Kathy Malloy. I will be back one more night for Mike, and then never fear, Your long national nightmare will be over. Mike will be back on Monday. Tomorrow, Greg Pallast will be joining me, I do believe, right here. Same Brad time, same Brad channel, so I hope you'll join me. And we have time for a few more calls, 877-520-1150. If you're an occupier, get in now. You can also, by the way, find an event near you at occupytogether.org. I was having some fun there with Tom from Nashville. And Tom, thank you for calling in and for tolerating me poking you a little bit because I have been reaching out to folks in the Tea Party, people who have been screwed. Who have been screwed by what's going on. Now, Tom and I think have a difference of opinion just a little bit about why the middle class is being screwed. But you know what? That's what this is about. It's a conversation. That's why, you know, the Occupy folks have not walked in with, here's our message. Because they're working it out. They're talking it out. These general assemblies that go on at these occupations are really fascinating. Read the minutes. Go to OccupyWallStreet.org, ST.org, and there's a link over to their minutes at their general assemblies. But they're all having these. It's really fascinating. This is the discussion that we desperately need to have, and to hear people on Fox News. I don't have time to play it this late in the night. Maybe tomorrow I'll be able to play it. But Sean Hannity, talking about these great American heroes standing up for themselves, standing up for their country, going on and on and on. And it turns out, that was about the Tea Party. It wasn't about these people. The occupiers, they're terrible. They hate their country. It's anti-American. They're a menace. They're a danger. Are you kidding me, Sean? Do you not know we got videotape, pal? Good Lord. All right, 877-520-1150. Going to fly through as many as I can here. Aaron in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hello there, Mr. Brad.
Hello, Mr. Aaron. What's on your mind, brother?
Well, you were talking about people trying to enter Bank of America in San Francisco and getting rousted, apparently.
I wasn't, but I think Josh Holland was. Yes.
Okay. Well, I have a suggestion because I think that everybody should give a fair and honest consideration of actually banking with Bank of America. So I think people should line up by the hundreds and thousands in front of each branch and go in and inquire about the services, every single detail, ask questions, make them sell you on every service of Bank of America and ask lots of good questions, and then weigh the pros and cons and do the services they offer you.
All right. Yeah, I'm short on time, Aaron. What are you getting at here? After you hear all these services, then what do you do?
Then you say, well, I'm going to weigh the pros and the cons. And then you say, well, I don't think the pros that you offered me on your services outweigh such things as loan sharking, the outrageous fees that you charge, the using bailout money to buy up other banks, using bailout money to buy the windows and doors place in Chicago and then try and shut it down and kick out the workers, using bailout money to...
All right, Aaron, good idea. I like it. You're saying go in there, use up a whole bunch of their time as politely as you can, and then do not do business with them and tell them why, right?
Well, only if you think that those negatives outweigh the positives that they offer you.
I hear you, brother. Good idea. And I got to go. I love the idea. I know what you're getting at, Aaron. I think it's very clever, but I'm against the clock, so I got to let you go. But good idea. Fun idea. Vince, I got about 20 seconds for you, I'm sorry to say. Vince from Oklahoma. What's on your mind, brother?
Yes, I'm driving through Oklahoma, but yes, Mike. I was just wanting to comment about the.
It's actually Brad, Vince, but that's okay. Go ahead.
Brad, I apologize.
Go ahead.
Anyway, okay, about the Tea Party a while ago, then I think he's got his logistics a little backwards there. That if we don't get the money out of the politics, we're not going to be able to do anything with the government anyway.
You're damn straight, Vince.
You've got to get rid of money. The money's got to be out of there, period.
Boom. There goes the dynamite. GetMoneyOut.org. I believe that's the name of the website. You're right on the money, Vince. Thanks for ending this the right way tonight. All right, guys, we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman. We'll see you at BradBlog.com.